Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of My Darkest Hour. I am your host, Stefan Bregotti, and thank you for joining me on this wonderful Thursday evening. Hope you guys are out there safe. And if you're out there investigating, make sure you're investigating smart. You know, make drink lots of water, protein bars, you know. A lot of people have been asking me at the university of things they should have in their paranormal toolbox, and I always say a first aid kit. You know, we are going into the summer seasons coming up here. I know a lot of people want to get out and go to those. But see that? Sorry, everybody, having some paranormal difficulties. Some people are trying to get attention, and I'm just trying to get through this and have a good show. So bear with me. If anything weird happens, and it will, it will. But this is the place where it happens. So why not? Let's just go ahead and have some fun. So tonight, real excited. A longtime good friend of mine. I've talked about his house multiple times when I'm at the Paracons. Regardless of where I am, people always come up to me and ask me about this location and in particular about this person. So the person I am talking about is my good friend, David Omen. A lot of people, you know, of him and his house. For a long time, people always mentioned the Manson murders and the victims, and they used to call it the Sharon Tate house, but it is not the Sharon Tate house. This is David's house. It's always been David's house. You know, he built this place with his dad and he did all this stuff, and so it's officially his, but there's so much more going on with the house than just all of that, you know? I've been there multiple times, 15, 16 times over the years, maybe more. I don't even keep track anymore at this point because, you know, I'm so used to going to that house, and I love being at this house. And what's really cool about it, people talk about haunted houses and like, oh, I'm so worried. I don't know what's going on. Well, we know what's going on at David's house, and he's very fortunate to have the spirits that are staying in his house. I would say haunting, and, you know, and a lot of people use these generic terms, but it's a little bit different, you know. They're not really trying to haunt. They're just kind of hanging out, you know, moving right along and found a place that they can be at and find somebody who's open to them and hosting them and inviting them in, and it just feels like a good time there, and I really enjoy going to his house. So if you ever get a chance to go to David's house, I know he does the tours and stuff. You know, follow him. You can go to his website at theomanhouse.com. And that's theoman, O-M-A-N, house.com. And he can put up the schedule up there. You can talk to him. You can do the tours. It's always a fascinating, fun time there. I've always had the best times there. So let's go ahead and bring him on the show, and we can talk a little bit more in detail about what David's going on and how everything came about. So let's bring him in.
Hello, Stefan. Yeah.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm surviving. I'm doing what I can. And it seems to be working right now, so I'm not going to jinx anything.
Yeah, exactly. I know we had a slight delay.
Yeah. But. So behind me, of course, is Abby. You guys all know her, and it's always a good time to have her come on the show. I got the 360. If she wants to chime in, she'll light that up, and that way she can get our attention instead of unplugging and doing weird stuff that she's been doing. So, moving on.
I was going to say, I want to introduce my friend Scully. He's making his first appearance on your show.
Scully.
Nice. So, no, everything's, you know, just crazy stuff been going on here. I had some social media influencers here 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, and it was amazing because the house was kind of dull and quiet, and all of a sudden we're talking, reminiscing about the Lindsay Lohan experience, her visit here. Oh. As I was saying, and I was in the kitchen, the six of them were in the dining room, and we were all talking, and I was mentioning the story of Lindsay's visit here, and I got to the point where I said, I just opened the door and I met her, and it felt like all the air in the tires was deflated. At that moment, the front door, which was closed and shut and locked, unlocked and opened itself on its own. The six influencers were like, oh my God, that just opened up on its own 10 feet away. And there was no one near the door. They were 10 feet from the door. We looked at the cameras on the outside of the house. There wasn't even a breeze, let alone a gust of wind enough to open the door.
Wow.
So we got that on video. So that's the latest video. And then they were also down on the third level in the theater room. And one guy walked in the room, and I have one of those cat toys that lights up.
Yeah, the cat balls.
Yeah, the cat ball. Yeah, cat balls. And for no reason, it was 20 feet away from him. It started lighting up on its own. And he was like, dude, the cat ball's lighting up on its own. Two other guys walked into the room, sat at the same spot at the entrance, and looked at the ball that was, you know, going off. And they said, "Spirits, come on, do it again. Can you do it again?" Nothing.
Really?
Yeah.
They're just doing it just to get their attention, and like, we're not going to play with it anymore.
Well, and also to say, look, if you think that's because he stepped into the room that somehow the vibration carried across 20 feet to the cat ball and started lighting up. They said, fat chance. You just had two other people walk in, stand right next to him, and the ball didn't react. All right. Yeah. I just noticed, like, the room got a little dimmer all of a sudden, and I just looked, and one of my lights in the ceiling just turned. Well, it's trying to turn off and trying to turn on at the same time. I'm getting, like, flickering like this, then light, then off. Thanks, spirits. We know you're here. What do you want me to tell them about you?
That were the ones that are doing it. They're like, yeah, that was me. That was me. Hold on. I'm flashing over here. That was that guy.
I'm on your show. I think they want to chime in about something. I just can't figure out what.
Oh, it's all cold. All of a sudden, I just got chilled. It's like hot here. And I got just really trying to get up on me.
They want to get your attention, apparently. I don't know what this is about. Do you guys have something you want to say? Say it into the microphone. It's right there, as you always know how to do.
Yeah, we're recording, so you guys want to say something, go ahead.
Holy shit!
Did you hear that?
The freaking light just went full on. Just not blink, and then stop, then blink. It's fully on right now, as you said that.
Nice.
That's confirmation. I mean, I wish I had a camera so you could see that light turning itself on like now, but I think you can see the room is a little bit more bright.
Yeah, the shading is a little bit darker. Brighter now behind you. It was a little bit darker than a minute ago.
Yeah, that was the number four light bulb that in this room, there's four ceiling lights, and that's the one that just went on. Yeah, they're here with us, and they're trying to say something.
It's their interview, too, so why not?
Apparently, it's become their interview. I keep looking at the light, expecting for it to turn off. No. What do you want from me, you sons of you-know-whats? You gosh darn interrupting a conversation. You must have something important to chime in about. I got nothing. I got absolutely nothing from them for that, but they're here.
That's fine.
Yeah, it's typical.
All right, so let's start a little bit from the beginning. So a lot of people, you know the story of the house. Basically, they get the bits and pieces. Well, why don't you tell us about how the house came about to begin with?
Let's see. Sunday, late mid-November, 1998, I get a call from my dad saying, get up. I said, Dad, it's 8 in the morning on Sunday morning. What do we got? He goes, I got something for you. I said, I found a listing in the LA Times Classified. Mind you, for our younger audience that doesn't know about this, pre-internet, there were things called the newspaper and the classified sections.
What's that?
Well, I don't mean to. I was just thinking, as you said that, I'm thinking, I'm not trying to talk down to you guys like I'm an old man talking from the mountain, but I'm just saying to you, pre-internet, there was something called there were things called the newspaper classified sections, where people would put in listings before Craigslist, before, you know, Facebook, whatever it was, that thing, the selling operation. You can basically find listings for things from automobiles to pets to horses to land to houses, etc. And he says, I just found a listing in the LA Times classified section for a lot that's $40,000 in Beverly Hills. And I'm like this. I started to wake up and perk up and said, the listing, does it say, I said, Dad, does the listing say 40K? And he goes, yeah. I said, Dad, it's got to be a goddamn misprint. There's no way it's $40,000 for a piece of land. And I said, unless it's the vertical slope, you can't build on. Sure, Dad, there's something. And he says, no, I'm telling you, it's a foreclosure. And I knew I wasn't going to get off the phone with him until I acquiesced and said, fine, let's go. Let's do it. And lucky for me, I did. I got up off my ass, took his advice, drove myself and my two dogs up there, got up to this lot. And I'm getting these like flashbacks, like going, you've been here before. You've been here before. I'm going. And it dawns upon me, that's at the end of the street from where I'm standing is where the Sharon Tate murders took place. Except it doesn't look anything like it did when I used to come up here and like when I was a teenager. The whole place at the end of the drive is like pavement and it stops abruptly. And then it's just all gravel. And there's these big fence gates at the end of the drive. And you look in and you just see gravel. So I'm like, holy crap, what happened? So my dad drives up and I start telling him, Dad, that's where the Sharon Tate murder. He's like, what do you care? I said, we're here to look at this piece of real estate. Can you focus?
Wow.
And as I'm thinking about it now, it's like, what an idiot I was. He's here to show me a piece of real estate. And I'm gabbing about some freaking, you know, sensational murder that took place some 150 feet away. And he's like, this is what we're here for, this lot. Forget what you're looking there. This is it. So we ended up buying the lot. 2 months later, I think it was early January 1999, we bought the lot for $40,000, which included the original construction that was started, that was halted, and we ended up finishing the house 3.5 years later. Hmm. And in 2002, late August, I ended up moving in here. And let's just say it was a homecoming of sorts. Because after 3.5, 4 years of working on this house, building it, it was like, I'm finally here. But it wasn't just me finally here. It was me finally realizing, oh, yeah, this place is loaded with spirits. This isn't, like I said, the stuff that I was having happen during construction was minor compared to what we had happening during the actual process of living here.
That's what an incredible deal, though. I mean, the view that you got, I mean, 40K, wow.
Yeah, we got very, very lucky. I mean, I can't count my blessings enough for my dad's fortuitous, intuitive nature. But he as the old saying goes, the man hit it out of the park. He really did. The house is an incredible testament to him and his design. And it's just a great, great home. I can't, you know, I mean, I'm happy that it came with ghosts, but I mean, I'm really happy about the whole everything else as well. It's not just the ghosts; it's the whole layout and everything. It's just, I'll have to say, there's a certain vibe about the house that people have said to me through the years, saying it really has this welcoming type of a feel. It's not, it's like very open arms coming into this house. It feels warm, and you know, and I'm like, yeah, I've heard that a lot from a lot of people that have visited, saying it just has a great vibe about it.
Absolutely. I say that all the time. You feel like, oh, my God, that's scary. It's like, not really. I mean, you get in there and it feels comfortable. Like you're walking into like a cool laid-back club or something. Everyone's just kind of hanging out. You know, the vibe is chill. All the spirits are in a good mood. And they are in a good mood until you piss them off.
Oh, yeah.
They're like anybody else. You can't disrespect them or they're going to strike back.
Oh, yeah. And I had some people that have said some things that were questionable in nature towards the spirits. And sometimes the spirits hear them and respond accordingly. And they find out, be a little bit more respectful than the times they, you know, they were when they were here not being respectful. And it's like, I had some terrible dreams about your house after I left. They said, really? What a surprise.
Yeah. And they're saying don't come back.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, I've had people say, I'm not, it's like, fine. If you can't handle it, it has more to do with you than it has to do with the house.
Yeah. Yeah, I think people go in there like that. They go in there and they kind of put themselves on a defensive right away, and they don't know how to chill. And the spirits there are trying to relax, and they're just chilling out and doing the thing. And they come across someone like that, like, oh my God, like what's up with this person? You know, the energy that person's giving off is affecting the whole. It's just spoiling the whole party.
Yeah.
So of course, they're gonna be like, dude, no, bro, you gotta go. You gotta go, man. You're out of here.
Yeah, they push them out. They literally push them out of the house. If there's an energy or a person that's of questionable nature and sincerity and attitude,
yeah,
they don't get to stay here very long because they feel uncomfortable, to put it bluntly, and they leave.
Yeah, I've been to your house and I've been to your parties and I've seen it happen. Everyone's having a good time. All of a sudden, this one guy is just beelining for the door. He just can't take it anymore. It's like, what happened to that guy? But he was probably going there not a believer and just talking smack, and they got tired of it. Time to go, yeah, buddy.
Pretty much.
So let me ask you, you said there was an original, they started working on this house at one point. Now, did they say why the construction was stopped?
Yeah, that's the reason why I got the house. They literally had spent close to $100,000 in developing the land, the hillside. They had put 30-foot deep caissons, drilled the holes with a drill rig, and then poured the concrete and set the rebar on top of it, and then they stopped. And apparently somewhere along the lines, when the building and safety department got hold of the plans and then looked against the land surveys and stuff, they found that the street was not wide enough to accommodate emergency vehicles. And they said, well, it says it's a private street. You can't build any more houses on a street that's too narrow to accommodate emergency vehicle turnarounds and all the other things. So it turns out that that's why, let's say I got the house in 99. It was like, that's why in 1989, 10 years earlier, the house was basically, the construction was halted. And then the bank repossessed the land. The bank sat on the property for a number of 8-9 years and then decided to clear it out of their catalog of unsold properties. And lucky enough, my dad found it, you know, took a chance on it, bought the lot and got everything taken care of with the city, and found out the issue, which was a typographical error, believe it or not, that somebody had transposed private drive, which originally was designated as, into a private street, and then had to have it returned to a private drive, and everything got, you know, how should you say, cleared by the city so you could build on the property. So yeah, it was dumb, to put it bluntly, it was dumb luck that brought me here. No offense, spirits, I'm not insulting you, I'm just saying it was dumb luck. No, not, you're not dumb.
See? Just, and they use a lot of sarcasm on those spirits over there too. Jay Sebring, my God, that guy is hilarious, dude.
He's a sex addict. Sorry, Jay. The truth is the truth, and you know it better than I.
I love hanging out with that guy at your house. That guy is so funny. And he's like poking all the girls and stuff and pulling their hair. It's like, how do you get away with that? You can't get away with that now. Not as
lit. Cool, man. Yeah. Considering what just happened to P. Diddy, I don't think you could get away with
it. Yeah, no, you can't do that. But he's from a different time, so whatever. We're going with it.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, you know, you got the house, great deal. You're building it. You're moving in. When do you realize that there's something more going on with the house as far as the spirit activity?
Oh, God. God. Honestly, shortly after I moved in, I mean, there was just, I mean, forget what I personally was feeling. I had at the time, I think my three cats and my two dogs were living here, four cats and two dogs. And I started, you know, looking at watching their behaviors and going, you know, this is a new house, et cetera. You've got to understand, they've got to get the lay of the land. But there were things that their behaviors were telling of something that had nothing to do with the house, but had to do with something in the house. And what I mean is my first dog was a Rhodesian Ridgeback, and something about Rhodesian Ridgebacks, which is the reason why I got the breed or looked at the breed, was they don't bark. They generally are quiet dogs, very, very amenable, but are very, very, very territorial. So when something is in front of the door, the front door, or coming up the door, somebody's about to knock on the door, their hearing is so on spot that they jump up and he would run to the front door and start bellowing. We'd open the door and sure enough, before somebody goes, "How'd you know I was here?" I said, "Sebastian gave it away. He heard you walking in up to this front door." And he would bark insanely at the front door. And we'd open the door expecting to find somebody there. Nine times out of 10, there was nothing there. There wasn't an animal in front of the door giving him the spooks or stuff. And mind you, I had had him since 1995, so 95 to 2000. So for the first 7 years of his life, he lived with me in my apartment. I don't recall any time in his 7 years of living there where he would randomly just start bellowing at the front door and I'd open the door and there'd be no one there. Never. But when we started, once we moved in here, it was like a regular occurrence that he would start bellowing at the front door and I'd open the door. And sometimes we would hear a knock at the door and we'd open the door and there'd be no one there. And it wasn't like ding dong ditch. I have a full driveway that's straight ahead. I mean, straight up and down in front of my house. And I can look, go out the front door and look down the street and up the street for 100 feet and see nothing. So it was like, no, that didn't happen, did it? It was like, I did hear the door knock. And it was just, you know, and then the cats. Oh, my dear God. My cats would chase stuff around the house. And I'm talking about one or two. I mean, sometimes we'd get three cats chasing something at the same time. Or I'd notice I'm sitting in the dining room and I'd see the three cats sitting in like a row like this, just tracking stuff. Or one cat would be there just like this. And I was going, okay, I'm looking hard, going, what are you seeing? What is there that you can pick up that I can't see? And it was like, nothing. I couldn't see it. They were acting upon something that I couldn't see. And one time, one of my cats, I think it was Tess, started howling. And I'm like, what the? And there was nothing there. It was like she was talking to something like that. And I only found this out a couple of weeks ago because I saw some video footage that somebody had sent me that they had shot 20 years ago. And I'm like, that's Tess. And she's sitting there going, and you've seen cats, like they're trying to talk. They're not meowing. They're literally trying to make speech. And I'm like, what the hell is she looking at? Nothing there.
Well, as far as we can see, yeah, of course.
Yeah. As far as humans can see, we can't. But she would be like, I'm going, you're intense. You're really intensely looking at something. So, I mean, that was like the first couple of years in the house. And then, of course, stuff where we had objects that would disappear and then reappear a few days later in a whole nother part of the house, that kind of stuff. Voices and footsteps and stuff that we heard where there was no one in the house but me and the dogs and the cats. Just, you know, and I knew that we had a security system in the house. So it's not like somebody's walking around the top floor. Okay. Then how come the infrared sensor is not going? So, I mean, it was just kind of like at a certain point, I just said, whatever, I faced the facts. I'm not living alone. I'm living with a bunch of spirits. But it wasn't at any time threatening or like The Conjuring or anything like that. None of those things that you've seen on television and film and read about happened here. But they were clearly here.
See, that's awesome.
And you, like I said, you were here in the early days. You remember stuff that was happening years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had multiple experiences there, and it's you know, it's one of those things when as a paranormal investigator, we talk about, oh, when this location and these experiences I've had, blah blah blah. But your house has gone from beyond that. You know, the first times there, I'm like, oh, that's interesting, blah blah blah. But then as I kept coming back, it was like a normal thing. It's like, oh, hey, oh, I just saw that move. You over there? Oh, hey, what's going on, you guys? It just starts flowing differently than other houses.
Yeah.
You know? Because when other houses you go to, the spirits, they kind of hang out. And they decide, well, I don't know about this guy. Let's see what he does. Decide if they're going to hang out with you or what's going to happen. Because they might just take off until you're gone.
Right.
But at your house, they're just all chilling. And once you get to know them, they're like, oh, hey, come on. Come over here and hang out with us. What have you been doing? Where you been? It's like, old friends. You're like, hey, what are you guys doing? You know, and I love that about your house. Everybody asks me about that. Isn't it scary? I'm like, hell no. I love hanging out at David's house. The spirit's there. And like I said at the beginning, look at the spirits that you have at your house. I mean, how cool is that? There's such great personalities.
Oh, God, yes. You said it, great personalities. But, you know, like I said before, it's not the same group of spirits on a regular basis. It's not like somebody died here and they're stuck here, myth. It's more like there's a front door and it's got a revolving door. Instead of an open and closing door, it's got a revolving door. So 24/7, there are spirits coming in. And there's spirits going out. There's spirits coming in. There's spirits going out. It's like a constant flow. And that's what's so unique about the house. As somebody said, can you clear the house? Can you send them on the way? I said, well, I asked Marianne Winkowski, the real life ghost whisperer, and she said, I can clear the house, but in about 10 minutes, you'll have a whole new set of spirits in there like that. And I can't just keep cleaning the house every 10 minutes because it's going to constantly flow in and flow out. I'm like, okay. Thanks, Marianne.
Yeah, you got this. You got the spirit party house. They're just all hanging out there. The Hollywood elites chilling at your house. That's amazing. Maybe he's in Beverly Hills, and maybe he thinks it's the elites. Like, no, I know people who have been there. I've been there. I've experienced it myself. I've experienced Jay Sebring multiple times. But every time I'm there, I'm always looking. Hey, where you at, man? What are we doing? Oh, it just got real cold over here. What's going on? Are you trying to sit on my lap? But yeah, it's always a good experience. And then of course, Sharon, God, I just love hanging out with her. Her energy is so great and so inviting, and she's warm and friendly, and she just wants to relax and have fun. And I love that about her.
It's true. A lot of people don't understand that it's a unique location. I don't know how to really explain it, but stuff happens and it's not bad, but it's very much, letting you know that they exist without frightening the hell out of you and scaring you to death. But
well, if they want to get your attention, they'll do whatever they can to get your attention. I mean, but you have other spirits there as well. I know that we've experienced Native American spirits there, of course.
Yep, Jack Johnson's spirit.
Jack Johnson, I love Jack Johnson. I got that picture in the bathroom where I just said, hey, will you be in my picture? And I didn't even look. I just point point there, and I just took the picture, and I looked back. And there's this big head in the middle of the bathroom. He's got this big smile, this big cheeser. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's the champ. How great is that? You know, he's just doing his thing. I mean, that's
big cheeser. I love it. I've never heard it put like that, that big cheeser.
Just a smile. Just a big head. No body, nothing. Just a big smiling face.
A big smile. That's Jack. That's Jack in a nutshell. He was always happy to be. I heard him say, I was always happy to be wherever I was because that's where the place to be was with me.
Totally. Total people person. Love that.
He was a strong character, a great personality. And I still, you know, I still embrace him and still cherish his memory very much.
Yeah, remember that EVP we caught at him where he was talking about showing his new moves? Check out my moves.
Yeah.
Like, whoa, he's in training still. It's like, dude, you rule. You're on the other side, and you're still the champ. Go for it.
Oh, I remember that. Oh, God, I remember that. God, that was so funny. It was like, did I hear he goes, still training? I'm like going, he's still training.
Yeah, Jesus. Check out my moves. It's like, damn, step back. Step back.
Then you go bam. Because all right, I checked it out. I got it.
We're not sparring. I'm not in shape, champ. Come on.
I'm not challenging you for the right to stay heavyweight champion of the world. No, I'm not. That's too funny. I remember that. Because I've had so many things happen through the years. It's like, do you remember this? It's like, oh God, yes, I totally forgot about that. Because, like I said, things that are more recent that have occurred that are really like the door opening take precedent and push down underneath all the other memories to the bottom of the stack. But I mean, that one I remember clearly. We were in my office and we were doing EVP.
Yeah. It's like, what? Cool. I remember during the ghost tour stuff back in the day, me and my wife were sitting up on the living room and you guys were going down. It was dark. And we're just sitting there talking to ourselves, and that big ass barbecue on your patio just starts just moving across the patio. It slams in the wall. Remember that? And you're like, Stefan, what the hell was that? I'm like, I think it was your barbecue. This thing is huge. It's like 300 pounds. How the hell is that moving across the mountain?
Oh, God. Oh, God. I wish I had cameras running then to capture that, but I remember that incident. That's like 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, God. So many things have happened here. So many crazy incidents and actions by the spirits that have happened here that I'm just like, oh, yeah, that did happen. Oh, yeah, that happened. It's like too many. So many, like I said, it's like an encyclopedia you need of the things that have happened here, and they all have to be documented. I mean, I've got some of them documented, but a lot of them are like falling through the cracks, so to speak. But, you know, hearing about it, it's like, oh, yeah, I remember that. Oh, God, yeah. Just nuts.
In the seance room, I mean, how many things that we've encountered in the seance room? One of my favorite moments in your house is we're doing, I think, one of the anniversaries of the Sharon Tate murders, the Manson murders. And we're some psychics there. We had equipment going, and I was kind of wandering the outside of the table. And the spirit, or the psychic, whoever psychic, there's a gentleman psychic there that was doing something. And he goes, hold on, there's somebody here. There's somebody here. And he looks at me and goes, it's for you. And I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, there's a spirit here. It's for you. And
Mark Nelson is the psychic. Mark Nelson was the psychic, I do believe.
It was some other guy, but yeah. He was sitting next to Mark. But the funny thing was, that was my mother's birthday weekend, and that was the year that she passed away, so I wasn't with her on her birthday. And it was, and we're like trying to figure it out, and I think Steve got an EVP and played it for me, and it was my mom's voice. And everyone's like, hi, Mrs. Brigatti, you know, happy birthday. And everybody starts singing happy birthday to her. And you get the EVP of my mom going, hello. It's like, holy shit. My mom's here at David's house. It's like, whoa, what's going on?
Your mom was with you all the time. You brought her into the house with you, and that's why she
made... Well, I always spent her birthday with her. That was the first time I wasn't with her physically, but she was with me anyway. So cool, Mom. Welcome to the party. That was amazing as well. When you started experiencing the spirits, let's say Sharon and Sebring and Jay and everybody, what was one of the first encounters you're like, wait a minute, I know exactly what's going on?
Boy, that's a good question. 2004. All right. Two things happened in 2004. Let's see. April. It was really 2004. I was walking down the driveway, probably about 100 feet down from where the house is here. And I was standing under this huge old growth holly oak tree. And I remember vividly now, I was bitching and moaning about, what am I going to do? I've gotten all these different things under my belt career-wise. I've been a dog walker. I've been a private... had a private investigation company, tried my hand at acting and all these other things. I said, what the am I going to do? I said, I need some direction. And I remember seeing in my mind's eye a vignette of a guy, it was me, driving up the driveway in a convertible 64 Mustang. And I've just passed the second house and I was rounding the corner. I turned to my left and I see this girl that's dressed to the nines in 60 outfit. And I looked, I said, wow, she is dressed to the nines. What? And our eyes met, and I looked at her, and at the time I didn't think of it, but it looked remarkably a resemblance of Sharon Tate. And I was like, wow, she is hot. And then I remember turning forward in the thing, and I see I'm about to go down the side of the slope. And I was like, no. And I turned the wheel, and the steering wheel corrected the drive train. So we were now going straight up the street. And then the camera angle cuts to a pan shot across my face and then cuts to the rearview mirror, and it shows in the rearview mirror there was no one there. And it was only about a 10-second vignette, little mini movie. I'm going, okay, what? And I was like, this is the first time. I go, what the hell was that? I was just like, what? And I heard this voice said, it's a gift. Go back to the house and write this down. And I'm like, who the hell? I said, and who is this? What is this about? And this woman's voice said, it's Sharon. And I go, Sharon? Who the Sharon? And I'm like, I don't even know Sharon. Sharon. And it was like, day, bing. And I said, oh, shit. Sharon, as in Sharon Tate, who died down the street? And I'm sitting there going like, I know what I saw, but that was, it, and it's not like I had a bit, people said you had a vision. No, it wasn't really a vision. It was like a mini movie. It's like you're seeing a replay of a movie that you've seen, a little clip of it. So I said, you know something? I'm old enough and wise enough to realize that disavowing when something like that happens in one way or another, where you hear your last, for lack of a better word, your inner voice or a spirit voice in your head telling you don't take her home, let your friend drive her back to your house, and you still do, and you end up totaling your car, which happened to me years earlier when I was a kid. I said, you know, I think I got to listen, because I said, what do I have to lose by listening and doing what she said? Regardless if it is Sharon or it isn't Sharon, who cares? What's the loss and harm to doing what she said? So I run back to the house. I grab an old legal pad, and I start writing it down, the vignette of what I saw. And it came out to be about 3 or 4 sentences long, this little paragraph. And over the course of the next, I want to say 3 or 4 months, in the middle of doing whatever, I'm like, here's another vignette. Write it. And I'm like, and it's not like they said, here's another vignette. I mean, I'm just doing something, working in the office. And all of a sudden in my mind's eye, totally out of left field, pops in another vignette. And I'm like, and I literally would stop what I was doing because I couldn't focus because it was totally getting in my head. I'm going, all right, I know what to do. I know the drill. I know the drill. And I'd go and I'd grab the legal pad and I'd write another paragraph. Well, after 3 or 4 months, I think I had like 30 or 40 paragraphs. And it's not like it was, it's a story. Here's the arc of the story. I'm seeing 1, 17, 12, 35, 22. And I'm going, and I'm like, and I was like, I got all these different scenes. And that's what they were. They were little mini scenes. And I said, I got it. And something said, call your friend Jimmy Vines. He's a writer and a screenwriter. And I said, Jimmy, I said, could you cut some time and get over here? And you know, Jimmy's such a fine friend. I said, yeah, you make dinner and I'll come over and help you. Because I don't work for free. And I'm like, fine, whatever. So I make the dinner and Jimmy comes over and Jimmy and I are sitting going through the stuff. And he goes, do you know what you have here? I said, no, that's why I invited you. He goes, you have scenes from a movie. I said, or a story. I said, what do you mean? He goes, they're all out of order. I said, okay. He goes, what you've got is the makings of a story that you can create vis-a-vis these scenes and putting them into some type of a semblance of order. And he said, you'll need transition scenes to go from A to B. But you basically, I said, what? Because screenwriters sometimes get into a funk. And I said, yeah. He goes, we're writing something and we get stuck and we're working on a linear path. So we're writing a story from A to B. But sometimes we can't get from A to B because we're stuck. So we stop it at A1 and go to A4. I said, why is that? He goes, because it's easy to skip what we don't know and come back to it later on after we continue with the story, and we'll come back and revisit and figure out what's the in-between. I said, okay. So he takes the pages and literally cuts them up into little pieces of paper. I'll never forget. Somewhere in the goddamn files, I've got the original thing. And he says, now each one of these scenes, we have to figure out how they go in what order. And I'm like this, I'm dumbstruck going, I don't know what the hell you're doing, but okay. He goes, think of it like a jigsaw puzzle. You have to figure out what piece goes in the next place and so forth and so on. At the end of this, after about 2.5-3 months, we wrote the screenplay based on those vignettes and turned it into the movie House at the End of the Drive, this thing. And I basically turned it into a story. And I kept on saying, I said, it's part of my story, but the truth, it belongs more to Sharon as a gift to me. Oh, yeah, thanks. I didn't say that. Yeah, I'll say it. what she had said to me after the first vignette was that it's a gift. I want you to write this down and this would be a movie. And he goes, I want you to play yourself in the movie because this is about your story and it'll help you with your career. And of course, with Human Frailty being what it was, my casting director, my director, my other producer said, no, we'll get somebody else to play the role. Looking back at it now, as the old saying goes, stick by your guns when you have to make a decision that's yourself in the balance. Because after the movie was made, people were saying, that guy's playing you, isn't he? And I go, reluctantly, I go, yeah. He goes, well, why didn't you just play yourself in the freaking role? And I, to this day, go, oh, God, I swear to God, I could have, I should have, I would have. And that's the thing is have no regrets. Do what you know you're told to do. And don't be afraid of unintentionally pissing others off when in the bottom line is it's to your benefit, to the project's benefit, to your service of the movie and everything involved. You got to goddamn sometimes stick by your guns, which I didn't. So learn from my mistake and stick by your guns and don't let somebody else run you out of your own production if you're qualified. So,
yeah, because that guy can't play you better than you.
Yeah, well, stop it, spirits. They're saying a bunch of stuff that I don't want to get into. Yeah, I agree.
You got it.
You're right. Now shut up with it. Enough. Because there's so much stuff behind the scenes that to this day I don't want to discuss. But it's like, yeah, we all know I could have and would have played a much better. It would have been, and like I said, I would have hired Heather Graham to play the Sharon Tate character. Because she looked the part and could have played it with the right type of zest and zeal. She really would have made a great Sharon Tate character. So live and learn, I say.
Nice. So you got the jigsaw pieces together. You're laying it out. You're doing the movie. Tell us a little bit about that experience. And I know you got Lance Henriksen in there, and he's like an amazing actor. Tell us what it was like working with Lance.
Lance was great. Lance is an old friend of the family. And it was funny because I had to go through Lance's manager and agent. And it was just like pulling teeth from an alligator. You don't want to do it. You hate doing it. And at the point where I was like saying $25,000 for Lance, For a half an hour shoot. And so then I called Lance. I go, Lance, yeah, it's David Ullman. How are you? Kind of don't want to say this, but I kind of have to let you know that having a lot of friction with your agent and your manager about the what? Oh, you will? Bye. Thanks. 10 minutes later, I get a call from the agent. Goes, all right, Lance will do the part for $5,000. I say, I'm like, thank you. So Lance comes in, Lance being the consummate professional and just the veteran actor that he is, shoots his scene. I think we did maybe two and a half takes because, you know, the first take was golden. The second take was just beautiful. What are we doing a third take for? So we're done in 25 minutes. And I said, Lance, I'll talk to you later. I got to get back to And I'm walking around the house. I go downstairs to the third floor where we have the makeup room in the guest bedroom. And I have my two on-set psychics, Krista and Michael from the Mystic Raven. And I come in the side door. There's Lance, Krista, and Michael on the floor, sitting Indian style, flipping over, doing tarot card readings. And I'm like,
yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh, shit. I'm thinking, money. The clock. Lance is here. I'm paying for this. You freaking. I said, Lance, you're still here? He goes, yeah, I'm still here. I'm having a blast with these two psychics, your friends. And I'm like, I said, you're not. He goes, no, I'm not charged. He goes, no, I'm not charged. What are you kidding me? This is on my time. I want to be here. So he sat there for 2.5 hours while we're filming the movie. And I keep going through to the makeup room and I'm walking by Lance. I said, Lance, he goes, just what are you doing? He goes, I produced the movie. He goes, then go produce the thing. He was like, go do your thing. I'm fine. Don't worry about me. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. I got to focus. I'm you're the professional. I got to learn to take from your advice from you. It was just so funny. And then during the production, and I didn't find this out. Let me see. One, two, three. There are three incidents that took place with the crew members, not the cast, but the crew. Didn't find out until the very end of the shoot. In one case, my makeup artist was doing used the guest bedroom as the makeup room. And as soon as we wrapped on the last day, we're like, all right, that's a wrap. I see her grabbing the three PAs that we had, the production assistants, and directing them to go into her, into the bedroom, and to haul ass and remove the two makeup tables and all of her equipment and all of her boxes of makeup and stuff. And it was like somebody had said, school's out, summer recess. And I was like, and then I didn't hear from her for 6 months until we had the wrap party. And she said, do you remember when we wrapped? I said, the day we wrapped? I said, yeah. She goes, do you remember who the first person out of your house was? And I'm thinking, I'm having flashbacks. And it's like, yeah, you. And she goes, do you know why the hell I wanted to get out of that house so badly? I said, no, what? She said, I had an experience that I just couldn't put into words. It seems like the three people that had the experiences were so, not terrified, but so traumatized that it took them 6 months till they finally got back together for the wrap party to tell us the story. So she goes, I'm in that room making up Jennifer, who's the girl that plays the Sharon Tate character. And she says, I've got the two mirrored makeup tables. And in the one on the right, I have a photograph of Sharon as a reference point. It's like, okay. She goes, Jennifer gets up out of the chair and walks into the room and goes upstairs. I said, yeah, I got that. She goes, I look to my left and I see a color image of Sharon Tate's face in the upper left-hand corner of the mirror. And I said, yeah. And she goes, and I think to myself, wait a second. I don't have a color photograph of Sharon. It's a black and white publicity photo, and it's not even on the left side. It's on the right side, and it's black and white. So she then, and this is all what she's saying, is she's thinking, she looks and goes, that's not right. She then looks to the right, and there is the 8x10 glossy photo of Sharon. She looks back to the left, and now there's nothing there. And I'm like, and she goes, as soon as we wrapped, I said, yeah, remember you grabbed the three P's and you hauled ass. He goes, yeah, I couldn't get out of there fast enough. I didn't want to tell you because I didn't want to freak anybody out because I didn't want to do a disservice to the rest of the production, freaking the other crew members out. So I didn't say anything, but it was scary. I said, second person, my key, let's go with Lorraine, the line producer. She says, I'm in the kitchen. It's the middle of the day and I'm getting something out of the refrigerator. And I turn my head to my right, and I see this gentleman walking across the what is the kitchen window. And he turns to me, and I turn to him, and she goes, our eyes catch at one point as he's crossing the edge of the window frame. I said, yeah. She goes, wait a second, she said. I realized that you don't live on a hill, on a flat lot. You live on a hillside. She goes, I went outside. I go to the side staircase. I look down. She goes, I look where the window is, and I look down. She goes, your window is 17 feet above the staircase. I said, yeah. She goes, then I can't explain how I saw this guy walking straight across the window, and our eyes met, and I said, what did he look like? And she goes, he had this black, kinky kind of hair, this and that. And I pulled out a picture of Jay Sebring and showed it to her, and she goes, that's him. The third person who had the most intense experience was my key grip. He was staying in the third level guest bedroom, the makeup room. And he tells me at the wrap party, he goes, every morning at the crack of dawn, he hears footsteps coming into the room and somebody tugging at his feet. Mind you, he says, the door is locked from the inside and I'm the only one in that bedroom. He says, the last night we were there, we did a seance. I said, yeah, we did a seance at around 1:30 in the morning. Oh, shut up, Instagram. So he says, you know, nothing happened. I said, yeah, it was a dud. He goes, no, it wasn't. I said, what do you mean it wasn't a dud? He says, I go back downstairs after we wrapped up the seance and I go to sleep, put my head on the pillow on the right side of the bed. And all of a sudden, I'm starting to feel like I'm going to sleep. And all of a sudden, I hear this man's voice say, you're coming with us. And he says, I feel my body being dragged up to the corner of the 11-foot high ceiling down there. And I'm like, what the? He goes, and I start screaming. You know, I say, put me down. No, put me down. He says, I then find myself sitting bolt upright in bed on the left side of the bed, nearest towards the bathroom door. I guess I'm all confused. I don't know what the hell's going on. And he says, that scared the living. And he goes, and I am a complete skeptic. I don't believe in the paranormal. I don't believe in ghosts. I have never had any experiences like this. But after that, it took me 6 months to wrap my fingers around it, to be able to communicate this to you, because to this day, I couldn't understand it. And of course, we got his interview because it was just so nuts, saying, that happened for real? He goes, yeah, I swear to God, that happened for real.
See, that's awesome. What a great experience, you know? A lot of people take some of that stuff for granted. Like, I want to experience something, but it's always the skeptics. They're like, oh, yeah, we'll get this guy.
Yeah, they want to prove to these people that have such disbelief. It's like, okay, how do you explain this, Mr. Disbeliever? Boom.
Absolutely.
I love it.
So now you have this movie. You worked on it. You produced this movie. House at the End of the Drive. How would people be able to see this? I've seen it. I was at the premiere.
You've seen three of the 7 or 10 versions of it.
I have seen 3 of them so far, and I love them. They're great.
Each time it gets a little bit better, to the point where we got Alan Howarth, John Carpenter's composer, to come in because he loved the movie. He goes, it's all over the place. I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, it kind of like is. This is the rhythm. It's up and down, up and down. I said, what's the problem? He goes, horror films are not up and down. This isn't a romantic comedy. I said, what? He goes, horror films have a trajectory where they move up, up, up to a crescendo. He goes, not like this. And I said, oh. He goes, I think I can help. So Alan came in. We did the score. He got together with me and the editor, and we basically tore the movie to the ground. Reassembled it, added some new scenes, took out some old scenes, and rearranged the entire, not pace, but the entire organization of the film. So the structure now, as he says, at least it builds up to something to that. When it ends, it's a big crash. And finally, after resisting so long to do something with it outside of theatrical release, I decided this year to put it online so people could rent it. So for $3.99, you can rent it for 3 days on Vimeo, or you can go to houseattheendofthedrive.com. There's a link right in the middle that says click link to watch movie. Excuse me, and you can see the movie there. And so far, the people that have seen it have said, you know something? I really liked it. It's totally unique and original. I didn't see the end coming. It was such a cliffhanger. And I, for the first time hearing this from people I don't know, going, oh, I did do good. I feel proud about the effort and energy and the years that I spent working on this, so that people actually appreciate and say, you know, this is fun. I like this. So, you know, better late than never, and before I die, that people should see this movie.
It's you got to put it out and release it when it's time, you know, and it sounds like it's ready to go. And that's
great. Oh, it's time. It's time.
So is there a link on a website they can get it? They can go to, yeah. Can they get it from the omenhouse.com?
The omenhouse.com has the link. House at the End of the Drive.com has the link. And again, it's on Vimeo, V-I-M-E-O. You can look up House at the End of the Drive that way as well and be able to click on it and watch it.
That's amazing. You know, like I said, everybody, I've seen the movie. I've seen a few different versions of it, and I've enjoyed it every single time I've seen it. I'm looking forward to seeing it again. You guys should go check it out. Learn a little bit more about it. You know, you can go there and see the stories behind there. And then maybe after you see it, you can set something up with David and you can take a tour of the house when he starts doing those again. I'm sure you'll be doing those sometime this year. And I have talked about doing a couple of events there as well. So we'll try to set something up. And
oh, yeah. We have to, Stefan. Yeah. We really have to. This year, we have to do something. 3 years of COVID behind us, it's time to open and do something fun here.
Time to get proactive, and I can have some more fun with my good buddy Jay over there and have some laughs. You know?
He misses you, apparently. Funny thing, Stefan, the light hasn't turned off in 45 minutes since it did it then, the one time. It's fine. Which, awesome. I'm telling you, that's a sign. There's just no explanation, because it's working just like it has for the past 4 years with that bulb in it. Not a problem. He wants you back and just said, he goes, I missed him.
Yeah, because we get goofy and we goof around with people. It's awesome. I absolutely love it.
He says, I enjoy his energy. He's a class act.
Yeah.
It's funny.
And of course, I love seeing Sharon all the time. She's so great to hang out with.
Of course, with that, but Jay just cracks me up saying I like Stefan.
Right on, Jay. I'll see you soon, buddy. We're gonna do some crazy shit.
Oh, I definitely think so. I definitely think so.
Well, David, we are coming to the end of the show, unfortunately, but I'm really glad that you got that movie available for everyone to check it out. You know, everyone to the sound of my voice, go to that website right now and check on that link, you know, see what it's all about. And then when we set some stuff up coming this summer, come join us, have some fun, and we'll show you around and tell you our experiences. And I'm sure you guys will all have your own experiences because everybody leaves there with some kind of experience, and it's always amazing. So, David, thank you so much for spending time with us. It's been great to catch up with you. It's always fun to have these conversations and reminisce of all the years and years that we've been doing this at your house. It's been great.
I think we have to do a live show from the house here streaming when next time you come down for your audience. It's special at the Omen House, live stream from the Omen House. Totally. With the dead.
We can do that. My TikTok's off the hook right now. I put anything up and it's just me doing absolutely nothing and I'm getting 10,000 hits in like 5 minutes. So it's like, okay, people are dying to get something. So let's do something for them.
Oh, absolutely. I think it would be a blast. And I think it's long, long, long overdue since COVID. You haven't been here. So we have to do that up for them and the audience.
Also, I want to mention, don't forget, David has a book out for The Ghost of Celial Drive. You know, it's a great book talking about all the history of the house, all the great spirits that have been there. Just Rudolph Valentino, we didn't get a chance to talk about him. That guy shows up at parties all the time.
Oh, yeah.
He's across the street. He's just over there having a martini at the bar at David's house. I'm like, where'd you get that? Comes with his own drinks. It's amazing.
It's true. It's very true. Booty likes to hang out here a lot. And I like it. I get a kick out of it. To me, it's the place to hang for the living or the dead.
Absolutely. It's always a fun time. Maybe that's why these big influencers have these wild parties at your house.
Like, no comment. No comment. Not any more of that discussion. My eyes be gouged out from that experience.
Oh, man. Yeah. Don't let them take over, man. You got to stay strong in your house, man.
Yeah, that's for sure. I have to stay strong. Not against the ghosts, but against the social media influencer.
Yeah. The living's always the worst. The spirits are never a problem. They get it.
That's the truth, Stefan. That is the damn truth, indeed.
All right, buddy. Well, thank you so much for joining us. You guys can follow him social media, except for not on Facebook, unless you go to the
home. I got banished from Facebook.
Dude, that was weird. I was trying to reach out to you. And I'm like, what the hell happened to his?
How do you think my fans feel? It's like, I can't get in touch with you now. What did I do? I didn't do anything. It said that something, a connection from my Instagram account, and it's not in my Instagram account, you know, flagged. It's like, that's not in my, and then it's just flat, gone.
Something weird is going on with you with that kind of stuff, because I had your cell phone in my phone for years. I've talked to you a million times on it.
Yeah.
And I went to go, after I couldn't do that, I'm like, I'll just start sending him a text message, and your cell phone number's gone. All I have is your house number. It's like, what? What happened to all that? You just disappeared.
I must be hitting some thumbs in the CIA or FBI or somewhere, or some type of the INS. I don't know, because that's just straight out of crazy land for me.
Yeah, it's all electronics, man. I hate that stuff.
Oh, God. Well, again, thank you for having me on, Stefan. It's been a long time, and I always have a great time chatting with you and talking about our past experiences here at the house.
Yeah, and we got many more to come. So
Damn right.
All right, buddy. I will talk to you soon, and we'll set something up.
Sounds good. Take care.
All right. Talk to you soon, buddy. And that's it for this episode of My Darkest Hour. That is my good friend, David Omen. Make sure you go check out that link. Go to the Omen House. You know, learn a little bit more about it. His book, The Ghost of Celial Drive. There's so much great information in there. He talks a lot about the filming and the making of the movie. Make sure you check that out. See the movie. Learn for yourself. Just enjoy it. You can embrace it. And then come see us, whether we're doing a live event or if we're doing just some tours of the house. You know, join us and we'll tell you the stories that we've all had And over the years, I've had so many, I can go from room to room and tell you things that have happened to me in there. Even in the bathroom. You got to be careful when you go in the bathroom. Let them know that you need the bathroom space. So they're not hanging out there. So go ahead and do that. And we will see you guys here next time on My Darkest Hour. And if you guys are going to go out there, make sure when you guys go out, and if you're going to go investigating, make sure you guys investigate safe, because that is the most important part. And we will see you guys next time right here on My Darkest Hour.